Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome. Today we're diving deep into, well, the very bedrock of Western literature, Homer's Iliad.
An absolute cornerstone.
Right. And, you know, most people think Trojan War, 10 years, the whole saga. But the fascinating thing about the Iliad itself is it zooms right in.
It's just 51 days.
Exactly. 51 crucial days in the 10th year. So it's not just a war chronicle. It's this incredibly intense psychological drama about rage, honor, and what it means to be mortal.
And that intense focus is key to why it still resonates, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, Homer, whether a single poet or, you know, an oral tradition, basically set the template.
The fountainhead, as they say.
Pretty much. And the title itself, Iliad, the poem of Ilium of Troy, it frames everything, gives it this weight.
Yeah.
And the language, of course, is elevated, epic, tactilic hexameter.
Yeah.
Meant to be heard, performed.
So our goal today, really, is to get past maybe the confusing battles and the lists of gods and understand its core mission, exploring heroism and, importantly, the price of glory. And it all kicks off with, well, wrath.
The menace.
Yeah.
That specific destructive rage. It's right there in the first line.
Okay, let's unpack that. The war's been dragging on for 9 years, right? But the real story here ignites not between Greeks and Trojans initially, but among the Greeks themselves. What actually sparks this famous rage of Achilles?
It starts with Agamemnon, the leader. He's forced by a plague Apollo sent to return his war prize, a woman named Chryseis.
Okay, seems reasonable if there's a plague.
It is. But Agamemnon feels slighted, publicly humiliated. So to reassert his authority, he basically says, fine, I'll give her back, but I'm taking yours, Achilles. He seizes Achilles' prize, Briseis.
Ah, and Briseis wasn't just property, was she? This was about status.
Precisely. It was a calculated public demolition of Achilles' his honor, his value, his standing in the eyes of the army and the gods. In that heroic world, time was everything. It measured your worth. Agamemnon basically spits on Achilles' timing.
So it's a deep personal insult.
To the core.
Yeah.
And Homer tells us immediately, this isn't just some squabble. Listen to the opening. Sing, goddess, the rage of Tilius' son Achilles, the destructive rage that brought countless sorrows upon the Achaeans. Destructive. That word choice is huge.
It connects personal grievance directly to mass suffering. Incredible. So Achilles feels dishonored, deeply wronged. What's his move?
He withdraws completely. Pulls himself and his soldiers, the Myrmidons, out of the fight. And worse, he asks his goddess mother, Thetis, to intervene with Zeus.
To do what?
To make the Greeks lose. Badly. Until they recognize how much they need him, until they restore his honor.
Wow. So he prioritizes his wounded pride over the lives of his comrades. Duty versus personal desire right there.
Absolutely. And the immediate effect is catastrophic for the Greeks.
Mm.
The Trojans, led by Hector, start pushing them back, almost driving them into the sea.
Which brings us perfectly to the two central figures, these opposing poles of the epic, Achilles and Hector.
The great foils. Achilles is, well, he's almost more than human. Demigod strength, speed. But he carries this immense burden. He knows he's fated to die young if he fights at Troy.
He had a choice, didn't he? Long life without fame or short life with eternal glory.
Exactly. He chose Cleos' undying glory, fame that echoes through eternity. And that choice, that pursuit of Cleos, initially drives his, let's say, selfish decisions. His journey is really from that isolating rage towards something much deeper by the end.
And then there's Hector, Prince of Troy.
Hector's the counterpoint. He's entirely human. The ideal responsible hero, you could say. He's not fighting for personal Cleos, not really. He's fighting for Troy, his family, his duty.
We see him with his wife, Andromache, and their son, Asalianax. Those scenes are heart-wrenching.
Some of the most tender moments in all of literature, arguably. That farewell scene where the baby is scared of his father's helmet. It grounds the epic in such profound human reality. Hector feels the pull of love and duty, even knowing deep down that Troy is likely doomed. He fights for honor within that doomed reality.
Such a powerful contrast. Before we get to the big turning points, maybe a quick word on some other key players. Agamemnon, for instance.
Agamemnon represents, perhaps, power without wisdom. He's the commander, but he's often petty, arrogant, insecure. His flawed leadership is almost as dangerous as the Trojan army.
And Paris, the one who started it all by taking Helen.
Paris is almost the anti-Lecter. He prioritizes personal desire, comfort, maybe even cowardice, over the honor and responsibility his brother embodies. And Helen. She drifts through the poem, less an active character, more a haunting symbol of the devastating power of beauty, the cause of it all. yet almost passive within it.
Right. So the Greeks are getting hammered, Achilles is sulking, Agamemnon realizes he messed up. Big time.
Which leads to the embassy to Achilles. This is around books 9 to 12. Agamemnon sends Odysseus, Ajax, and Phoenix respected figures to Achilles' tent.
And they offer him everything. Right. Okay. Return to Briseis, tons of treasure, marriage to his daughter. They're basically restoring his time tenfold.
They are. Lavish gifts.
Yeah.
A formal apology. And this is where Achilles does something truly radical.
He refuses.
He refuses it all, flat out. And his reasoning is stunning. He basically says, why? Why should I risk my life, the one life I have, for honor and treasure in a system where the top guy, Agamemnon, can treat me like nothing? What's the point of Kleos if life itself is forfeit?
He's questioning the entire heroic code.
He absolutely is. He says life is worth more than all the riches of Troy. It's a profound philosophical shift. His anger isn't just about Briseis anymore. It's about the meaning of life and death in this brutal world.
So the heroic contract is broken, for him at least. But the war grinds on. The Greeks are desperate. This must lead to the big turning point.
It does. Achilles' closest friend, Patroclus. He can't stand watching the Greeks suffer. He begs Achilles to let him wear Achilles' armor and lead the Myrmidons back into battle just to rally the troops.
And Achilles agrees, but with a warning, doesn't he?
A crucial warning. Drive the Trojans from the ships, but do not pursue them to the city walls. Come back.
But Patroclus.
Patroclus gets caught up in the moment. He tastes success, maybe a bit of that Kleos himself. He pushes too far, driven by battle lust, by hubris. He charges the walls.
Ignoring the warning.
And Hector kills him. Book 16. The death of Patroclus. This is the event that shatters everything for Achilles.
How does it change his rage? It was already pretty intense.
Transforms it. It's no longer about wounded honor. It becomes this monstrous, consuming grief that morphs into an all-devouring need for vengeance. It's almost inhuman.
Wait, didn't he just reject the whole glory thing? How does this grief turn him into what he becomes?
Grief obliterates reason, perhaps.
Mm.
His humanity cracks. He arms himself with that incredible shield Hephaestus makes and returns to battle like a force of nature. Unstoppable. He even fights the river god, Scamander, who's choked with the bodies Achilles has thrown into it. It's terrifying.
His grief manifests as pure destructive power.
And it all focuses on Hector. He hunts him down, kills him in this climactic duel. But then
he doesn't just kill him.
No, he does the unthinkable. He ties Hector's body to his chariot and drags it in the dust around the walls of Troy, around Patroclus' tomb, day after day.
It's sheer desecration, an offense against gods and men.
Absolutely. He's denying Hector funeral rites, defiling his corpse. It's an act that horrifies even the gods.
Yeah.
They see it as crossing a line, threatening the cosmic order. Achilles is losing himself completely to this rage.
So the gods have to step in.
They decide enough is enough.
Yeah.
And this leads to the final sublime resolution in book 24. Zeus sends Hermes to guide Hector's aged father, King Priam, secretly into the Greek camp.
Priam goes into the lion's den, into Achilles' own tent.
Alone, except for Hermes' divine help. And what happens inside that tent? It's the heart of the Iliad. Priam kneels before Achilles.
The man who killed his son.
Yes. And he performs this act of unbelievable courage and humility. He clasps Achilles' knees, the supplicant's gesture, and he kisses the hands, the very hands that murdered his beloved son, Hector. He begs for the body back.
How does Achilles even react to that? What could possibly break that rage?
Priam appeals to Achilles' own father. He says, remember your father, Peleus, old, like me, waiting for news of his son, knowing you won't return. And that parallel, that shared human experience of fatherly love and loss, it breaks through.
He sees Priam not as the enemy king, but as a suffering father, like his own.
Exactly. The shared condition of mortality, of grief. Achilles looks at Priam, thinks of his own father, and the rage dissolves into tears. They weep together, the killer and the father mourning their different yet similar losses. Achilles' humanity returns in that moment of shared sorrow.
Incredible. And this leads right into the deepest themes, doesn't it? What does Achilles say to Priam then about their shared fate?
He offers this profound, if bleak, wisdom about fate and free will. He tells Priam something like, the gods spin the thread of life for mortal men, so they should live in sorrow while the gods themselves are free from care. It acknowledges fate's power. Achilles knows he will die, Troy will fall, but
characters still choose how they face that fate.
Precisely. They choose rage or vengeance or duty, or in this final crucial moment, Achilles chooses compassion. He grants Priam's request.
Let's touch on the literary craft here too, something Homer is famous for, the epic simile. These long comparisons seem to pause the action. How do they work?
They're brilliant, aren't they? Homer uses them constantly. He'll compare a roaring battle line to, say, waves crashing on a beach, or a dying warrior to a poppy drooping in a garden, or famously, generations of men to leaves falling in autumn.
What's the effect?
They do a few things. They connect the often brutal, heroic world to the rhythms of nature, to everyday life, agriculture, the seasons. They provide these moments of reflection, of beauty or pathos, right in the midst of violence. They universalize the experience.
And speaking of craft, that shield of Achilles we mentioned, Hephaestus forges it. It's described in incredible detail. What's its significance?
Oh, the shield is a world in itself. It doesn't just have monsters on it. It depicts the entire cosmos, sun, moon, stars, and two cities. One is at peace, weddings, harvests, justice being administered. The other is at war, siege, ambush, bloodshed.
So it represents everything Achilles is leaving behind or fighting for. Or maybe both.
It symbolizes the whole spectrum of human life, the world of peace and community that war inherently destroys. Achilles carries this image of civilization on his arm as he goes out to unleash destruction, the deeply ironic and poignant symbol of what's at stake, what's sacrificed for Cleos.
Which circles back to maybe the most powerful theme. Homer refuses to make it simple good versus evil, doesn't he? The humanization of the enemy.
Absolutely critical. We feel Hector's nobility, Priam's dignity, Andromache's sorrow just as keenly as we feel the Greek struggles. Homer forces us to see the shared humanity, the shared suffering on both sides of the wall. There are no real villains, only flawed, suffering human beings caught in the gears of fate and their own choices.
So, wrapping this up, what's the ultimate takeaway? What does the Iliad teach us after all this sound and fury?
I think it suggests true heroism, the kind that elevates the human spirit, isn't finally found in conquest or even Cleos. It's found in that moment of compassion. Achilles' greatest act isn't killing Hector, it's showing mercy to Priam. Finding shared humanity overcomes even the deepest rage.
And the poem ends not with the fall of Troy, which is famously not in the Iliad, but with the funeral of Hector.
The funeral of Hector, tamer of horses. It ends on this note of profound sadness, of shared grief that transcends shades. It reminds us that loss, and perhaps love, are the universals that remain when the battles are over. Maybe the challenge the Iliad leaves us with is this. Knowing our time is short, knowing mortality gives our choices weight.
What monumental acts, whether of compassion, like Achilles finally shows, or perhaps cruelty, are we setting in motion with our own choices today? This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akutra Foundation.